Live from Pitch 25 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandon.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George, assistant to the regional manager behind the glass. We're out at Pitch 25 in Edo. Andrew Carlson is here. Great way to spend my Monday. Right at the start of the show, you look at Andrew Carlson, and your day's better for it. It really is. How's it going? Good weekend?
Good weekend, actually. Turned out okay. Lots of urgent care visits still my future, but because the little one just keeps seemingly just rashes and things like that. But good news is that Taylor made the All-Star team as a 7-year-old on the 9 and under.
Really?
So we went through 2 days of tryouts and games and everything, and I thought I was really worried about her just being too young, and I was trying to brace her for the fact. Now, you know, this isn't like other tryouts where there's a chance you might not make it.
You have a lot of experience with that?
No. Unlike you, no. I actually had success in sports, but I was like trying to brace her because I know there's stuff that I think she's still learning to do in terms of, you know, force outs and things like that. And all of a sudden, I got a text while I was in the gym this morning, and it said, hey, I wanted to let you know before the coaches let everybody know. Tay made the squad. I was like, oh, my God, I stress more for my daughter's sports than I ever did playing in my whole life.
I imagine I will be the same way. I imagine I'll be the same way. That's awesome. That's good to hear. Joe, good? Everything good on your end, too?
Tough weekend. Not going to lie. Dealt with food poisoning all weekend. Not my best weekend.
Oh, for real? Is that what Paul was talking about? Like, you were one of the many people that had food poisoning?
Yeah, I went through food poisoning all weekend, so it was a long one, but we're back and we're healthy and we're good to go. So,
Do you know where you got it?
No. Honestly, I have no idea.
Is this from just scanning the globe for remote after remote, just snarfing up whenever you can get your hands on?
I didn't go on remote at all this weekend. First, like, my babysitter was sick on Saturday, so I didn't do the Saturday show. So it was Andrew, RJ, and Sean, and then I was supposed to do Sunday. But then I woke up and I was dying, so I skipped that one too. So, yeah, it's been a long weekend, but we're alive and we're good. That's all that matters.
I listened to a bit of the Saturday show.
I'm not on?
It was just coincidence. I wouldn't say that there was any reason as to why. If you were on Saturday, I would have been listening on Saturday. The weekends that you were on, I was probably out of town. So there was nothing to be worried about. It was not personal. It was just business. I was looking for something to listen to as I was waiting for my barbecue. And Andrew Carlson was driving. He didn't say anybody's names in the first segment of the radio show. But they did a great job. I'm just kidding. A better job than the Astros did? How are we feeling about the Astros 4 games in, 2-2, against what I think is going to be a pretty good White Sox team, actually?
Yeah, no, look, the White Sox are a good team. And a split is just fine when you see some of the teams that got swept or really, you know, had a rough weekend in the opening weekend. And the only reason why people lose their minds and overanalyze these things, you know, is because of the fact that this is week one of the regular season, opening day. Everybody's analyzing it because this is supposed to be, in their minds, what the rest of the season is going to be like. We forget that this is an Astros team that even if they had gotten swept, they've been swept by the Tigers before, the Orioles 2 years ago before the Orioles started to get good. There's bad teams that beat good teams. It happens. It's just that it's magnified because it's the opening weekend of the season. And when I looked around baseball and I looked at the scores and how some of the series opening series went, there's a lot of teams that should feel a lot worse than the Astros. I mean, Dusty is going to Dusty, and we saw that yesterday with some of the lineups. But at the same time, your pitchers pitched well for the most part. Your hitting is going to come around. I don't think there's anything to worry about.
No. Dusty even talked about it to our friend Gupta. I'm not even going to try to say his first name.
Yeah, you got a lot of recognition late in the week for that.
How do you say his name, AC? Why are you shaking your head?
Manav Gupta.
Manav.
Proud Coug. Manav.
Manav. Yeah, I know he's a cougar. Sometimes he comes and hangs out with me in the radio booth. But I guess he's never corrected me on how to say his first name. That's my bad. But he did an interview with Dusty Baker, and Dusty was talking about how early in the season you're looking to play 500 baseball, then you're trying to get a little bit above 500, then you're looking to win series. So for a first series, I think the White Sox could be a contender for the postseason now that La Russa's gone. I think they're going to be pretty good. Taking 2 of 4 is not bad. You mentioned Dusty's going to Dusty. You just have to get it into your mind, Houston, that Dusty Baker's never trying to win one game in the regular season. He is managing for the 162. Like yesterday, he could have pinch hit for Yordan, pinch hit with Yordan Alvarez. Why didn't he do it? Because he wanted to give Yordan an entire day off. So Dusty's going to manage for the 162. Nothing's going to change when it comes to that front. I thought overall a good start to the season. What you expect to the start of the season. How about the good, the bad, and the ugly from the weekend? You started Blankers, and let's be optimistic on a Monday. We're at pitch 25. We're going to have a good time. We're happy to be out, and we all knew about that as well. The good. What's the good about the first four games of the series?
I think the first good for me would be, for the most part, starting pitching. I think for the most part, the starting pitching did their job. They kept you in ball games. Some performances were better than others. You know that they weren't stretched out enough to where you were going to get to close to 100 pitches or get deep, deep into games. But I think the starting pitching was as advertised for the first four guys for the first weekend of the year that I don't think you have a ton to worry about with the starting pitchers, and they're going to get guys out. They're going to keep you in ballgame.
I heard some people complaining that there wasn't a starter that went further than five innings. Like, come on, man. It's first start of the year. It's the first start of the year. Now, Dusty did talk about it, I believe, after the game yesterday, where he felt like he had to keep Urquidy in an inning longer. He felt he had to use Luis Garcia an inning longer because the Astros, quite frankly, are a pitcher down right now because of the Ryan Presley under the weather. So the bullpen isn't as strong as you would like. It's not really at full capacity because you're pitching with a pitcher down. And early in the season, whenever starters aren't going deep into games, you really don't want them to throw more than like 75
pitches.
Well,
let's be honest. He probably kept Seth Martinez in there a little longer yesterday, too, because
he's eating an inning. He's eating an inning.
Yeah, so those are things that, again, growing pains at the start of the season that you're just going to have to work with and adjust to. But I think that those fans that thought that maybe you should have seen those pitchers go a little deeper aren't thinking about the big picture. Kind of like when you were setting up about what Dusty had said to Manav about, you know, you're just getting your feet wet at first, and then you're trying to get to 500 and all those things. Well, this also translates to the pitching staff, where you're not expecting too much too soon from pitchers because then you could burn them out and you could get them seriously in a predicament to where later in the season they can't give you everything that they normally could give you, and they run out of gas in the tank and you see a tired arm and an ineffective pitcher. You want to avoid that. So in the first series of the year, to get the pitching that you got, starting pitching especially, just fine with me.
I was okay with where the starting pitching was at as well, especially the fact that you were down a reliever. I would have liked Urquidy to go one less inning, Luis Garcia not to start that inning, but because of the Astros state of the bullpen early in the season, you know, Dusty had to do that. My good is the middle of the order. I don't have fear of Yordan Alvarez's hand. Yes, he's probably going to get more days off than any of us would like, but I'm okay with that because we're looking at 162, not one. Yordan doesn't look to be bothered at all by the hand. He was 5 for 11 in the first three games, didn't play in the fourth game, and had 5 RBIs in that game, hit a moonshot as well in the series. So I love what I saw from Yordan Alvarez. Kyle Tucker looks like it's Kyle Tucker, which is refreshing because Kyle Tucker, he's not Alex Bregman notorious for slow starts, but he's known to start a little bit slow out of the gates. And then your big offensive free agent acquisition, Jose Abreu, looks like Jose Abreu. 6 for 16 in the series. You know, didn't have any extra base hits, but we were also kind of realistic about what Jose Abreu was going to be at this stage of his career. So I love what I've seen from the middle of the Astros order, and that's encouraging because a lot of times an offense is driven by the middle of its order.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think Kyle Tucker may have benefited from the World Baseball Classic a little bit because it kind of speeded up the process for him, and it got him more engaged than the other otherwise would be as
games
he just came into camp.
Right?
Yeah. And you know, so the intensity's ramped up. You know, your peers are ramped up in terms of who you're playing with, what you're playing for. It's not just regular spring training games where you're looking for what time you can get a tee time or go fishing. You're really concentrating more. You're more dialed in, and you kind of find your game quicker. And I think that probably was to his and the Astros' benefit. You look at, for all those
Real
things.
Quick, I have a hot take about WBCs. I feel like it's good for the hitter and bad for the pitcher.
I can see that.
Because it ramps up the hitter, gets him ready to go, but the pitcher's like, oh no, how much are they pitching to like 100%, and do you want them to be doing that before the start of a regular
season? It's just like what we talked about why your starters didn't go more than five. You're talking about the fact that these pitchers aren't on a schedule to where they're going to be doing things that they'd be doing in July, but here, because it's the WBC, those players and those managers are expecting the pitchers to do what they're normally doing in July,
and that's a tough position.
And
it might be the same amount of pitches, but it's high-stress
pitches.
It's the
intensity, yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And there's a lot more workload on you because of it, and therefore you're trying to get too cute and too fine and paint too many corners and do too many perfect pitches that you're not used to making this early in the season. to your detriment possibly later in the season. But overall, look, I think the middle of the lineup is great. You know, I don't like the fact that we're still going to start talking about the depth, and we're going to look at the depth of this team, yep. and we're going to continue to question decisions and or the guys that are going to be a part of those decisions. And I think that's something that we're going to constantly have dialogue about until you see some of the injured guys return.
Yeah, you know, Michael Brantley going to West Palm Beach, Florida, yep. to get some extended spring training, to get some at-bats, work on baseball stuff. And then, of course, Altuve going to be out until probably June. Joe George, what was your good in the first four games of the series? As your Astros won two games, and then your favorite American League team, the White Sox, also won two.
I'm going to go with just the situational pitching here, because it felt like all weekend long through these four games, the White Sox kept coming up with bases loaded. Like, over and over again, the White Sox had runners on base, and the starters who, yeah, they didn't go deep into the game, they were getting out of some really big jams early, and so was the bullpen. So, you know, it wasn't the best pitching performances, but honestly, through the first weekend, I don't think you could have asked for much more from the whole staff, top to bottom. You know, the Astros, besides yesterday's game, had a chance to win every single one, and they could have won yesterday's game, too. So I thought just the pitching was overall for an opening day weekend series was really strong.
I thought the Astros were lucky to keep the White Sox to six runs yesterday. The amount of traffic they had early in the game, yep. with Luis Garcia, which I guess can be looked at as a good or a bad, depending if you're a glass half full or a glass half empty guy. It's great to see Luis Garcia able to pitch out of some trouble, but bases loaded, nobody out. I mean, he was in traffic, it seemed like, every single inning, but was able to pitch out of it. Seth Martinez gave up the couple runs late, and I've seen some people like, oh, no, the Astros bullpen, they were not going to be as good as they were last year. Let's be realistic with Seth Martinez is for this team. And look, I think Seth Martinez is good. You point out to Martinez like what he did last year, really establishing himself as a real big leaguer. And maybe on most bullpens, he's probably like a middle uh-huh. of the pecking order dude, maybe a sixth, seventh inning guy.
I think he's for still the an Astros, innings eater.
Absolutely. For the Astros, he's a mop-up guy. Like
no, but I'm saying for any other team in the league,
yeah.
I think he's a situational. He wouldn't be in maybe nothing but blowouts.
Right.
More so on another team, but I think he's an innings eater for Dusty.
No doubt. Yeah, he's a guy to eat innings with. He's a mop-up guy for the Astros because the bullpen is so good, because the Astros have so many good dudes in that pen. All right, so Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25. If you're looking for some afternoon plans, this is the spot to be. A lot going on in Houston today. Of course, it is Championship Monday. Maybe not the championship game we all thought we would see. San Diego State and UConn, but a championship game that should be fun to watch. I'm pulling for the Aztecs, by the way. Who are you pulling
are
for?
You?
I'm pulling for the Aztecs. I want
yeah,
to see the Aztecs.
I still will pull for the underdog. I just didn't like some of the tactics that they were using, and I thought FAU really controlled the majority of that game and then lost on a buzzer beater. But I didn't like the elbow to the ribs and some of the after-the-whistle plays that San Diego State was making.
Good, clean basketball. I mean, okay. They're the Aztecs. What do you expect them to be? Choir boys?
No, but I don't expect them to be bitches either. I don't think they got to do what they did after the whistle.
713-780-ESPN. What was your good? What was your bad? What was your ugly from Astros opening weekend? I also got to talk about the Chaz dilemma. Got to talk about the Ryan Pressly dilemma. But the good, the bad, and the ugly from opening weekend for the Houston Astros. 713-780-ESPN. The HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live from Pitch 25 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Paul 80 asking us the question, which Paul Gallant actually yeah. answered for us down the line. He said, I don't know when you guys are going to bring up the Strohs right out of the gate, baby. But what happened in the ninth inning with the balk and what seemed to be an illegal mound visit? I was at the game, so I don't really understand what happened. Felt like it took the steam and at the end there. I was over at the U of H baseball field where they got the series victory over eighth-ranked East Carolina,
all right.
By the way. So I had to watch the condensed game. I'll go back in between our next breaks and try to pull that up exactly when it happened. But from the way I understand Paul and Joe describing it is that the White Sox used an illegal mound visit because they didn't have any mound visits left, which can turn into fines and suspensions if it's a reoccurring problem. What it sounds like is that because they took an illegal mound visit, it counts as a balk, and the Astros runners got to move up 90 feet. But I'm sure that there was some sort of, you know, dog and pony show about it, some sort of, like, explanation going on, and maybe it took away some of the Astros' momentum. I don't know. 713-780-ESPN, HRP.
On that note, real quick, and I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but this is going to – it even happened in Sunday Night Baseball last night. One way that the pitchers early on are going to combat the pitch clock is they're going to say that pitch com's having an issue.
Yeah, I saw that with Will Smith
on Sunday Night Baseball. But several other pitchers have done it. And then their immediate response is, oh, never mind, it's working again.
Yeah.
And the umpires really, they're at the mercy of either, are you going to be that guy or are you going to let it go? But the pitchers are definitely using it right now.
You know
now.
What that reminded me of? It reminded me of a basketball team dropping some water out of a team huddle.
Or remember when Jason Kidd dropped the Coke on the floor because he didn't have a timeout? That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of when Will Smith did that yesterday. But you're right, they're going to do some things to kind of recircumvent the will a little bit. 713-780-ESPN. Andrew Carlson, I say so many nice things about him, and he brought you water. He brought himself water. And does Branham have any water? You gotta keep the talent happy here, AC.
You gotta
keep the talent happy.
You can't bribe friendship. Just because you say nice things about him doesn't mean that he doesn't realize I'm a better guy.
I'm gonna start calling him ugly. He said he had two hands. I understand.
Yeah, he kept the other one for himself.
Exactly. Exactly. That is a,
which should tell you more.
Selfish move. Selfish move by AC. What were the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Astros four-game series? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 at Edo. Brady says you also have to look at the past couple of years. The Astros always come out 500 or less for the first week or two.
True.
And then get rolling. No need to worry at all. I'm not worried at all. But there is good, bad, and ugly coming from the first four games of the series. And our next texter gets me to my ugly, 8437. He says switch Bregman and Tucker in the lineup. Bregman looks lost to plate, which is hard to think of since he's usually the most patient. I'm not going to call for any lineup changes. Like, Dusty Baker knows what he's doing, of course, over 2,000 wins, World Series manager, Hall of Fame manager as well. But my ugly is Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman was 0-16 in that four-game series. And look, Bregman's notorious for coming out slow, but 0-16, it certainly catches your eye. But on top of those 16 at-bats, he had 7 strikeouts. 7 strikeouts and 16 at-bats is bizarre for Alex Bregman because he's not a huge swing and miss guy. And I'm probably reading way too much in this. I tweeted this earlier today at Jeremy Branham. But Friday's game, he got on base. I guess it was a walk that allowed him to get on base. He scored on the 3 RBI double by Yordan Alvarez in Friday's game, game 2 of the season. And I went back and I was watching the highlights of that game, just, you know, looking at the games and stuff this morning. And Martin Maldonado is telling Bregman to get down,
and
slide to his right. Slide to his right. Martin Maldonado's left. Get down. And Alex Bregman just goes in standing up, which, like, that's not the first time in baseball history that a player goes in standing up, doesn't want to slide. But what worries me a little bit, one, is that he's 0-16 with 7 strikeouts. But on top of that, like, what has been the bugaboo for Alex Bregman these last few years? It's like his body isn't great. He has, whether it's injuries, whatever the case may be, it's that, like, he's a little bit banged up, it seems like, all the time. And he even talked about this whenever he came back from the hamstring injury, 2 years ago, I guess it is now, where he said that, I can't be that guy that's Charlie Hustle. I can't be going 100% all the time. But by seeing that play, and again, I'm probably reading way too much into this. Tell me if I am, 713-780-3776. But I think that you have Alex Bregman, a guy who doesn't really trust his body. Like, he's worried about getting hurt.
I don't know about that, because I think he's just putting too much intense pressure on himself all over the place. You know, he wants to be that guy. He's making more money. He did the mic'd up on the first ESPN telecast, and that even worried me, simply because that's a tough spot to put a guy that's got to make plays and be a part of almost every play on the diamond.
He got a ground ball for the final out, too.
And then he did that, too. and yet, I think at the plate, now he was the victim a couple times of what I thought were questionable calls. But overall, for a guy that I keep harping about how good his plate discipline is, I think he's pressing. I think that everything that you see right now is a guy that seems to, I don't know if maybe it's the upgrade in the money or something, but he seems to have always does this to himself anyway. But I think he's trying to do too much. And I think that now that he's healthy, he's trying to get his power stroke back. He knows that, you know, his contract is going to come up again and again and again, and he wants to live up to that. He wants a big deal. He sees the other third baseman's getting money. And I think that the entire thing just becomes a firestorm. Where I just looked at him at the plate, and it looked like he's pressing. It looks like he's trying to do too much too early. And hopefully he'll just settle in and realize, I don't have to do everything because I got a really good team around me. I just have to be me.
Yeah. See, I'm a little concerned that his me is not quite good enough. And look, I like Alex Bregman a lot. I think he's a really good baseball player. Do I think Alex Bregman's a $30 million a year baseball player? I really don't.
I don't either.
And you kind of like I didn't really think we were going to go to the contract extension talk, but I did think about it this morning.
Yeah, I did too.
Because I'm like, man, Bregman's really struggling. I know he's going to be my bad. He's 0 for 16 with 7 strikeouts. He doesn't want to slide when his teammate is telling him to slide. Like, is he concerned about his body? Is he concerned about staying healthy? Probably. And you can understand that with the injury concerns that he's had. But if you look at Bregman's last 4 years, because, I mean, he was great in 18, finished 5th in MVP voting. He was outstanding in 19 when he was 2nd in MVP to Mike Trout. Many people thought he should have won the MVP over Mike Trout. The next 4 years, though, for Bregman, COVID year in 20, we hate the COVID year. 21, he was hurt, played in 91 games, and then last year was like his recovery year. In that span, and you throw in the first 4 games this season, Bregman's a .256 hitter with a sub-800 OPS. Like, that's a good player. It's not a $30 million a year player.
And he's seeing Machado's money, and he's seeing other third basemen that, you know, in his mind, he feels like he's as good or better than, whether true or not. And I think that's something that he sees and he wants to set as a goal for himself to get to, too. And he's not on a path to do it. So, therefore, he's pressing even more. And I think that's a problem. I think that he remembers the MVP year and the power that he had. And he believes in his heart of hearts and his mind he can get there again. And so it's the difference between what you're trying to do individually versus what the team needs you to do best. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's kind of stuck in the middle right now, trying to do too much and pressing, feeling like he's putting extra pressure on himself.
Jim Crane talked before opening day with like his media types. I think he might have said this to Berman, someone. He said this to someone, that they want to lock up Altuve and they want to lock up Bregman. Alex Bregman's 29 years old. He's still under contract this year and next year through the age of 30. Look, it's not time to make that decision yet, but I'm not re-signing Alex Bregman right now. Like, I need to see Alex Bregman be 18, 19 Bregman before I'm giving him $30, $35 million a year. Because the Alex Bregman that we've seen the last 3 seasons, even if you want to throw out the first 4 games this year, that's fine. He's not a $30, $35 million a year player. So I urge Jim Crane and Dana Brown to pump the brakes a little bit if you have any sort of urgency in signing 29-year-old Alex Bregman beyond his 30th birthday, when he, quite frankly, has not been anywhere close to a $30 million player the last 4 years.
But my deal, Jimmy, is I'll resign him. But I'll resign him at a fair price.
Yeah,
I'm not
no
resigning
doing that,
at the money that he's targeting, or it seems to be his
I'm
goal
cool with that.
To go get. Yeah,
cool
but that's the only reason why I'm having that conversation.
Because
now,
quite frankly, he's probably playing like what? I mean, he gives you good defense. Like, yep. What would you feel is a comfortable AAV for Bregman? And another thing is the length of the contract, because he's going to be 30 next year. He's going to be 31 when you start looking at that new deal. I mean, I think like a 3-4 year contract, three-four year deal is probably fair.
Yep.
There ain't no way Bregman's doing that. And I feel like not upwards of $20 million is probably fair.
I was going to say, I'm sitting right at 20.
Yeah, and he probably wouldn't do that. There's no way he's doing that.
If you want to reward loyalty as part of it, too, and you give him 20 more a year, he's not going to think that's anywhere near what he's expecting. And so he's either going to give you one hell of what he thinks is a sweetheart deal to stay and play where he wants to be, or he's going to test the market and he's going to say, I'm worth more. And it might be a harsh reality to find out, hey, everybody's seen what you've done, but in terms of what you can still do and what's left in the tank, I don't think he's going to get a lot of feedback. He's going to get the Clint Capela syndrome, where you go and talk a good game that you're worth this. Uh-huh. But when you go and find out, you're going to find out, and a lot of teams say, no, you're actually worth that.
Yeah, he's a Boris guy now, too.
Yep.
Like, he wasn't a Boris guy when you signed him to the first deal. He's a Boris guy now. What's your bad from the 4 games that you've seen the Astros play so far this
year? I'm going to go to what I said all along, and that is, and I know you won't go there, so I will, and that is Dusty Baker's misuse of Chaz McCormick, because once he got in the lineup, he did everything you wanted him to do. He got on base, whether he got it on base by getting hit by a pitch, drawing walks, getting hits. He got a knock in an RBI early in game 3. He did the kind of things that you need him to do offensively, or you'd like him to do offensively. He did things that you need him to do defensively, too, to where I think that you watch the 2 center fielders, and I just think it's even more of a disservice and injustice that he didn't play in the opener, and that he didn't that Dusty didn't already know, this is my center fielder. Because yep. Jake Meyers doesn't look like he's anywhere close to being a starting center fielder for anybody in this league,
yeah.
But Chaz McCormick's a guy that's been there and done it for you. And until you figure it out for the long term, he's a guy that will continue to do what you need him to do.
I was trying to be optimistic and, you know, have the benefit of the doubt for Jake Meyers, and then he made an awful play on a ball in center field in the 2nd game of the series, the White Sox series, where I'm like, all right, I can't defend this guy anymore. Joe, what's your bad for the first 4 games? Joe's gone. All right, Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick.
Sorry, I'm here.
Let's get into that. Okay, what is your bad, Joe? Because right now it's you.
Joe, were you giving tours? Were you giving tours to people again that were more important than our show?
No, my phone rang at like the worst time ever, and I was trying to ignore it and turn on my microphone. It was a disaster. I'm gonna go bad. I'm just gonna say like just the production at the bottom of the lineup, and we knew it was gonna come that way. But come on, it was pretty ugly for the most part. Besides an awesome moment for Corey Jokes getting his first hit. The bottom of the order was just atrocious.
Thank you, Blankers.
You're welcome. I know, I was waiting for Jeremy to do it. It threw me off.
Let's dive further into the Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick conversation. Jake in center for two, Chaz McCormick in two. I think you'll find interesting who's played more games than Chaz McCormick so far for the Astros. What is Dusty Baker doing? It's the Killer Bee, 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. What's going on in center field for the Astros? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Pitch 25. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Pitch 25, great spot to hang out on a Monday afternoon. Get out here for happy hour. Get out here to watch the national championship a little bit later tonight, San Diego State and UConn. Blank Branham, 2662, definitely no longer a fan of the Killer Bees. Bregman, probably. I can understand that. I don't think Bregman's a $30 million a year player, and he's got mediocre salsa at best. So I can understand that Alex Bregman wouldn't be a fan.
I don't agree with that, by the way.
At least Branham. The salsa, or that he's a $30 million a year player?
The salsa. I like the salsa.
Well, you're from Chicago. Who would trust your salsa?
No, I'm not saying it's like it's not like my go-to, but like it's not meat. I don't think that's a fair label for it.
It's not good.
I mean, it's not elite. It's good.
Is Alex Bregman's salsa good? 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. Andrew Carlson gives it a thumbs down after a little bit of hesitation. Blankers, did you try it the day that I brought it in?
I did not.
I brought it in once in a previous – well, I guess it was in a previous Radio Life for you, Joe George. But I brought it in once. Everybody who tried it, all two of us, did not like it.
Okay.
That's a huge sample size. I mean, when you're trying to figure out how good is something, you get two people to try it, and then you know what you're doing.
I walked into Kroger the other day. I mean, it's been a couple months ago. But it was on clearance. They had hundreds of this stuff.
Probably it's going to spoil.
Maybe.
Does it? At a certain point, I would think with fresh produce in the mix, it has to expire.
Probably. But once you go on clearance, your stuff ain't good.
That is a bad look. There's no denying that.
Alex Bregman's production at the plate is turning in to the level of salsa that he makes.
Ouch.
It's now,
early. Did Cody try it?
I don't know that he did.
Cody is my go-to sauce master.
Why?
Like he spends a lot of time on sauces and concocting sauces and mixing sauces at fast food joints. I would trust his opinion if he likes it or doesn't like it.
Yeah, but now I have more questions because are you saying, Joel, that you consider salsa a sauce?
No, but I mean it's
salsa
with sauces and condiments, Joe.
Oh, well, you said sauce.
Well, if he's also the sauce expert, I believe his taste buds are directed towards being a pretty good connoisseur of foods and condiments and things like that. I trust his opinion.
No, that's a fair assessment. I was just looking for clarification there because I
was
confused.
It, okay,
thank you, Joel.
And I said condiments. Okay,
I was going to say
it's not a condiment either, but
I mean that's not a breath mint after, Joe. That's actually. A you know sauces and things you put on other foods.
I tell you what, Joe. I'm going to go to Kroger when I get off work today, and I'm going to go to the clearance aisle, and I'm going to find one of 100.
Take a picture.
Alex Bregman sauces, and I'll bring it into work, and we'll ask the people, we'll ask everybody around the station to give it a shot. You can bring the tortilla chips, and we'll see what everybody thinks.
You can expense that.
I don't think it's very good. Can I expense
that? Because it's part of show prep.
Oh, okay. That's even better. Now I might buy two.
But take a picture and shoot to show it's on clearance.
Okay, yeah. I will. If they still carry it. Segueing from salsa, bad salsa to bad center field play. 9780 says Myers needs to get everyday play at AAA. Was a liability at the plate at the field. I think Myers is honestly past that. Like last year when they sent him down to Sugar Land towards the fall after the trade deadline, he was crushing it. And then as soon as they bring him back up. He disappears again. He becomes a ghost whenever he starts facing Major League Baseball pitching.
He may be the clear definition of your term, which I love, which is a 4A player.
I think
like
he might be.
Better than a AAA regular, but not close to being a Major League everydayer. And that's something that this entire organization
has to just accept. And I think it'll be easier now that Dana Brown's in charge, because we knew how enamored James Click was with him being the center fielder of the future. And now when you got a different guy in the chair, he's going to give you the most realistic approach to all of this and say, hey, look, I understand that at one point a lot of people thought real highly of you, but you either got to pick it up and get it going, or we're going to have to get on and find somebody else to do it.
Degenerate Gambler on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, he says, think they have to let go. Jake died on that wall. Because I don't think Jake Meyers was a 4A player prior to that. Prior to the torn labrum, I thought Jake Meyers had a future as being the Astros' future center fielder. And I do think that the Astros, two different general managers, James Click and even Dana Brown, they look at Jake Meyers as a guy that has potential to be an everyday center fielder in Major League Baseball. Where they look at Chaz McCormick as a guy who's kind of like scrappy. He's kind of a gamer. He's probably not an everyday center fielder. He's probably a solid to really good
fourth outfielder. He's the perfect fourth outfielder on good Major League Baseball team.
They don't view Chaz McCormick as the future center fielder for the next 5 to 7 years. Whereas James Click, and I think even Dana Brown for a moment, James Click definitely thought that Jake Meyers was the future at center field for the next 5-7 seasons. Dana Brown maybe tried to see if he was that guy in center field for the next 5 to 7 seasons, although he does love Drew Gilbert. But I think that that's where Jake Meyers is at right now. I know it's early into the 2023 season. I know they're still going to give Jake Meyers a lot of opportunity to play, especially with Michael Brantley being out, because there's opportunities to play both Jake and Chaz, especially against left-handed pitching. Whenever, Brantley's out. So I think that what Dusty is doing, though, is he's giving – he wants to see if Jake can find that pre-torn labrum form. He wants to see if Jake can find
How many chances is he going to get, though, Jeremy?
I think this might be it.
Yeah,
I think this might be the last chance.
All we keep hearing is, well, he's being sent down to get to get the mojo back, to get back. And then when they brought him back up, no, he's fine because he did it in Sugar Land, so he's going to be great. And then we see it again and again. He looks deer in the headlights at the plate. He looks gun-shy in the outfield. He's pulling up on balls if he feels the warning track or he knows he's got to dive. When he does dive, he's immediately testing both labrums and shoulders to figure out if everything's in place. And he just looks like he's completely – I don't want to say lost. He's apprehensive. He's apprehensive about – there's no attack in his game in defensively, and then there's that deer-in-the-headlights approach offensively where he just – he watches so many balls go down Main Street and then looks like, wow, that was a strike. Yeah, it was a strike the whole way, Jake. From the time it left his hand, it was – fastball down Main Street, and you just decided to let it pass you by.
Yeah, he's passed the send him down to AAA and get every day at bats because he's no longer a prospect. Like he, it's time to find out. It's make or break with Jake Meyers at the big league level. They sent him down to AAA for every day at bats last year, and he crushed it. You send him down here, he's going to crush it. He's got to be able to hit Major League Baseball pitching, or he's just a modern day Jason Lane. To be quite honest with you. 713-780-3776. Now, we were asking the question, what is Dusty doing? Jake in center field twice, Chaz in center field twice. I think he was just trying to motivate Chaz McCormick. He was just firing him up. This is Dusty Baker again being a genius. This is Dusty Baker again being a magician. Did you see what Chaz McCormick did in his 2 starts? He was 2 for 5. He walked 3 times. He stole 3 bases. Dusty Baker was firing up Chaz McCormick by not playing him in the first 2 games there. And it worked.
He
Dusty
also
knows what
him
he's
in the
doing.
Jimmy and disrespected Dusty the hell out of him
doing.
For not playing him in the opener.
And it fired him up. And what have we seen from Chaz McCormick? We've seen a fired up
you
Chaz
just
McCormick
said,
that's ready to play.
You just said this guy's a gamer and this is the guy that brings all this stuff to the table. He doesn't need external motivation from Dusty. He's already gotten enough when he heard that the manager didn't like him and they didn't think they trusted him in center field. And he earned all of that and more. And that's one of those games where, yes, there's 162 of them. That one was special. The fact that he not only did it there, but then he sat him the very next day too, and then you see what you got from him the final two, it just reiterated to me over and over again. That was whatever the thinking was by Dusty, that was overthinking.
We wouldn't have seen that Chaz McCormick,
I
though,
disagree.
If he was not mad and angry. A hungry, mad Chaz McCormick is better than a content, happy Chaz McCormick.
Then take food off of his table, but don't do that to him.
And he did him a favor. Didn't have him face Dylan Cease.
He could still be hungry without having to deal with that crap.
He didn't have to, you're saying, keep the clubhouse spread away from him?
Yeah, because you said he needs to be hungry. Well, he can be hungry without food instead of being hungry without Dusty doing that kind of disrespectful crap.
This is Dusty Baker getting the most out of Chaz McCormick, because that's what he does. That's what everybody tells us that he does. And I didn't believe it until he won the World Series, and I'm a converter. I'm now a truther. I'm a Dusty truther. And this Chaz McCormick is playing on a different level, and I think he's mad. I think he's mad. He needed to be disrespected on opening day. He needed everybody to tell him that Dusty hated him by sitting him out on the second game of the season as well. And now we're getting a hungry, motivated Chaz McCormick. He's turning him into an all-star.
I think Dusty Baker is one thing. I think Dana Brown's got a whole hell of a lot on his plate he didn't expect to have this early in the season, because he's got to figure out center field and depth in the outfield, and he's still looking at second base every day going, is this truly the long-term solution until Altuve comes back?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that short-term, though, right?
Yeah, it is.
5'8", 5'6", can it's funny you mentioned that. Can Corey Jolks play second base? He's dabbled at second base.
Has he?
I've seen him play second in college. I think he might even have some minor league games at second base. I don't think he's a second baseman at the big league level, to be honest with you. And we were talking about some dudes that have played more than Chaz McCormick so far this season. Corey Jolks played 3 games. David Hensley played in 3 games as well. Yiner Diaz, Mauricio Dubon have the same amount of games as Chaz McCormick. But it wasn't a great first 4 games for Jolks either. 2 for 12 and struck out 6 times. So I don't think he can play second base at this level. Might be the first guy sent down when Michael Brantley comes back. Either him or Salazar.
Yeah, Salazar, I think, is the first guy. And then I think when you look at it and you look at who's down there and a guy like Durden, and then you look at what's been going on here, I think the more that, like I said, Dana Brown has on his plate, and the more he's trying to figure out answers, he's going to look for solutions internally first, and he'll be looking to see if maybe a switch or two gives another guy an opportunity that's ready to seize the opportunity itself.
Dana Brown, you're right, has a lot on his plate. Does the back end of his bullpen all of a sudden become on his plate? If Presley is hurt, who should be the closer? Is Presley hurt? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live at Pitch 25 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One of the great things that I've been telling you about most recently is Pinnacle Construction. Everybody's always looking for an upgrade. Everybody's always looking to get a little bit better at something. Sometimes you're looking at to do that for your home, for your house. I know you've been thinking about a home remodel. Well, Pinnacle Construction is for you, and it's the right time to do it. Whether you just want something new, want something fresh, just a new look, whether it's the kitchen, the bathroom, a room addition, of course you have. But you've been waiting for the right people. Well, I have those right people for you. Pinnacle Construction, someone that you can trust and not charge you through the roof. Pinnacle Construction, the name you need to know. General contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair. We know that choosing a team to remodel your home can be confusing. It can be a headache. It's a stressor in your life. We'll allow the talented team at Pinnacle Construction to take all of that stress away from you. Doug Johnson, owner of Pinnacle Construction, is a native Houstonian serving all of the greater Houston area. Doug and his team will guarantee quality in-house work, and you know that they're here to stay. Licensed and insured. Stellar customer service for every project and every customer. You can get your free estimates with a qualified Pinnacle Construction technician right now. You can call or text. We know some of you are lazy and just want to text like me. Call or text to 281-900-3004, 281-900-3004. You can email Doug, Doug@PinnacleConstructionLLC.net. Financing options are available. Ask for the ESPN discount. Pinnacle Construction, born and building in Texas with over 20 years of general contracting experience. And you can visit 975generalcontractor.com to learn more.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Pitch 25, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 in Edo. Dr. Dre reminded me. I forgot about this. Joe Kelly got a loss handed to him by the Astros. That was worth 3 wins.
No,
so that makes the 4-game series an overwhelming success that they handed Joe Kelly an L.
I loved every bit of that, and I loved the fact that Blummer was able to capitalize on it too and keep everybody in the moment focused on just what a D-bag Joe Kelly is. And the fact that, you know, Joe Kelly, he, just like everything else, when he's doing his podcasts and he's, you know, he's completely insulated from getting his ass kicked, he's a big talker and acts like that he carries a big stick and he could beat someone's ass. Well, when he does what he, you know, does by going into baseball games, especially at Minute Maid Park, he realizes he's catching all that and he deserves every freaking bit of it. And any chance Astros fans get a chance to give it to him, they're going to and they should. And when he walks off the mound with runners on base that he put there, after looking a little bit rattled and fragile, and then he takes the L. It's a joyous and monumentous occasion for Astros fans.
So Blummer got into him a little bit. I was listening on the radio.
He was just setting it up, and he was just like, hey, couldn't happen to a night, you know, and he just, Blummer has a great way of subtly just kind of keeping people in the moment, going, you know, just kind of so that people stay on it.
I've been reading that Evan Drellich, whatever you want to call him, book, Winning Fixes Everything, and I just finished a chapter that said Jeff Blum and Alex Cora almost got in a fight on the team bus in 2017.
Oh, that was a big deal.
I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all.
They do a really good job of trying to keep that down the down low, but I've heard a couple stories about that where it got, like, extremely intense on the bus.
So you had heard of this.
I had heard of it.
This is the first I've heard of this.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a boombox involved or something.
There was a boombox. So it was right after, like, Hurricane Harvey and things like that.
Yeah.
Remember the Astros going to Arlington and they couldn't fly home? And then the Rangers wouldn't switch the series
with
them because they didn't want to have, like, a long road trip at the end of the season, even though they had no chance of making the playoffs. So they played that game in Tampa. So, like everybody was upset. Everybody was kind of frustrated. And Cora, like, would play a boombox after the games. You know, that's common on buses, you know. But he did it right when they landed in Houston after Harvey. And everybody's, like, on their phone trying to figure out, like, arrangements to either get picked up or how they're going to get home. So much devastation in Houston. And Cora's, like, blaring the boombox. And Blum went up to Cora. He's like, hey, you mind turning it down or whatever? And Cora already didn't like Blum because Blum and Hinch were real tight. So that kind of, like, led to, like, this big shouting match. And then they had a big confrontation right when they got off the team bus at Minute Maid Park.
I don't know that you really want a piece of Jeff Blum.
Especially if you're little itty-bitty Alex Cora.
But Jeff Blum, people don't realize, is a pretty sizable dude, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and so I knew that this, I had heard and gotten wind of this
I had no idea
after it happened and then a couple other times. And I thought, kudos to everybody involved for kind of keeping it on the down low as much as they could. But, yeah, I remember hearing about it going, yeah, that was kind of internally a bigger deal that they were able to keep out of the media. But it was definitely something to it, and it fired a whole lot of people up because, like you said, there were a lot of lines drawn in the sand in that clubhouse after Hinch left and a lot of kind of remnants that people weren't over quickly. And Cora was also a guy that he was extremely opinionated and fiery, and he didn't back down. And there were a lot of different instances where Cora was a guy that could be a fire starter as much as a guy that was a coach that was looked to, you know, by a lot of his players.
Yeah, they apparently – Cora was very, like, naive, and he thought that Blum was, like, after his job for whatever reason. But it was a pretty entertaining chapter, to say the least. I have no idea. 9695, the Astros were linked to Reynolds for a while, Brian Reynolds of the Pirates. Do you see them making a play to trade for him? Not anytime soon. There's also been rumors that the Pirates are looking to sign him to an extension. I think it's very minor that Brian Reynolds is ever an Astro, but it wouldn't come until July. At the very earliest.
But again, this is my point about what's on Dana Brown's plate right now. I think when Dana Brown took the job, he was basically like, this is a team that could probably run itself in the short term while I get settled in. And now he's realizing real quick, based on what happened and didn't happen in spring training and maybe a little bit before that, that he's got work to do because, you know, injuries happen and you've got to adjust and sometimes you've got to react quickly. And I think that as we've seen them good enough to stay 500 and get out of this series with a split, and you know how good this team is capable of being, you also know that you've got a two-month window that you're going to be without Altuve. And you're trying to figure out how much of a window you're going to be without Brantley, and hopefully that's a really good sign he's going down to Florida to get ready, but you don't know how quickly he's going to get ready and how the shoulder's going to react to the everyday swinging and fielding and doing the things he's going to be expected to do. So you know that you have issues. And those issues you can either try and solve internally, which he said earlier right before the season started that's where they'll start. But I think when you look at the internal candidates, those being on the roster right now and those that might be brought up to the roster, you really don't have a clear-cut solution in a couple of different ways. And you know that there are teams that already know their fate for this season, like the Pirates. There's going to be teams that know the Royals. We're not going anywhere for this year. So we're looking to get as young as we can so that we can get good and sustain it down the road. So if it means that we can get something back for a veteran player, we might be interested in doing that. You're right. Normally, in a lot of cases, it's going to happen closer to the deadline. Some teams are saying, you know, at any point in time, it just depends on what we get. Make it worth our while.
I have a hard time believing that a team that it's not going to be in the playoffs, one, thinks that way this early in the year.
Everybody thinks they still got a shot.
Sure, and I mean, you're right. Like, Kansas City doesn't have a shot. Oakland doesn't have a shot. Pittsburgh doesn't have a shot. Cincinnati doesn't have a shot. But I don't see any of those teams trading, like, a starter before the summer. And they expect Altuve back by June. So I don't see a scenario where the Astros are trading for a starter. Like, maybe they could bring in a utility guy, like a backup, something like that. But I don't know if it's a huge upgrade over David Hensley or Mauricio Dubon.
Well, I mean, like, though they made the roster, if you look at an Iglesias in Miami, or if you look at, you know, I don't think that there's any thought about getting Aledmys Diaz back, but there's a guy that, you know, and it's in your own division, but Oakland knows they're not going anywhere. And they did that probably with the thought process of, we're probably going to try and flip him at a certain point, but we're not going to worry too much about, you know, him and our long-term plans. He's here for the time being, to where if it made sense for both parties, I think that they'd be open to it right now. But I think that that's Dana Brown's responsibility to try and put a time frame on it. How much leeway am I going to give these guys to kind of settle in after just one series way too soon? But how quickly do I have to react if 2-3 series down the road we're still talking about this, and everybody that's watching this team on a daily basis says it's just they don't have any solutions right now for some pretty key opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'd have to take a very specific player for a very specific team. The latest dilemma for Dana Brown is his closer, Ryan Pressly, who Roger Clemens noticed he was shaking his arm on opening day. Now, Ryan Pressly shakes his arm pretty often. I've noticed him do that quite a bit in the past. His velo was fine, like, in that game versus where he was at last year. Now, last year's velo was down compared to previous years. And then Dusty Baker doesn't use him in Game 3 of the series, which was an obvious save situation, through 21 pitches 2 days before. Like, that was a spot that Ryan Pressly should be pitching. Was asked about it after the game. He's under the weather. He's under the weather. Dusty did say that they hope that they got him back on Sunday.
He's got that elbow flu. It's going around. It really, it's not coughing or sneezing. It's internal inflammation.
Maybe I'm just way too naive. Maybe I am an Astros homer, but I really don't think Presley's having any sort of arm
I'll
issues.
Tell you what it is. It's exactly what you said in the first segment. This is one of the drawbacks of a guy that played in the WBC. Got ramped up sooner than he normally would. Got into a couple of situations that he normally wouldn't be dealing with until, you know, April, and probably put a little too much too soon on his prep overall, his entire body, and especially his arm and the load and the work that he's doing. And I think it's probably backfired a little bit.
Yeah, I tend to believe Dusty that he's a bit under the weather or doesn't feel great. Maybe he's a little fatigued, whatever. But I also think it's pretty clear that it's not an arm issue, because if it was an arm issue, they would have already put him on the injured list. And that would have already happened. Like, Dusty's already said that he's pitching shorthanded, so they would have added him an arm. If it was any sort of arm discomfort, they would shut him down for 2 weeks anyways just to make sure that he's fine. So I really don't believe it's anything with the arm. I believe that it is under the weather. I think we would have already seen a roster move if it had anything to do with the arm. But if Ryan Pressly was out for a significant period of time, or even if it was only 2 weeks, maybe they put him on the IL today to add an extra pitcher, even if he's only sick, even if he only has the flu or the elbow flu, who would you like to close if Ryan Pressly was out?
Well, I think it's Brian Abreu. I think he showed you in the postseason a year ago that he's the guy with the stuff and the moxie now, that he's the guy that you go to next. And you know that we've talked about this numerous times. You have such a good, a really solid bullpen fortified by so many big arms that have been there and done that in the past. And you got a guy like Stanek that has a plus-plus fastball that can then become your sixth inning guy. And everybody gets bumped up except for you leave them, everybody else in their same spots, and just take Abreu from the sixth, put him in the ninth. Everybody else stays status quo, and Stanek becomes your sixth inning guy. And more teams than not would love to be in the predicament that you have, because they would love to have the depth in the bullpen that you have that most teams don't.
Yeah, I would like that as well. That would be something that I would love to see, is what does Abreu look like in that save situation as the closer. We've seen him in higher leverage spots. We've never seen him be the dude in the back end of the ninth. We've seen it on occasion, but nothing crazy. One of the things that I don't think we would see it, though. Because, like, Dusty Baker's, the way that he manages, he just bumps everybody up a spot. He just bumps everybody up one. So right now his pecking order is Pressly, it's Montero, it's Neris, it's Abreu, it's Stanek. So I think everybody would just move up a seat. Like, you would see Montero become the closer. Neris would be the eighth inning guy. Abreu would be the seventh inning guy. I personally would like Abreu, but I think it would be Rafael Montero. Hopefully we see Ryan Pressly tonight. Everything's okay.
I also think contract matters. I think that when you give Montero the money that you gave him, that you –
basically, whether you believe it 100% or not, you also make everybody believe you have 110% confidence in Montero no matter where you use him. And so this is why, to your point, this is the same why when Dusty starts getting creative with his lineups, he just it takes out one guy and puts the other guy right where you took the other guy out, and he just keeps pressing on. And so you're probably right. As much as we think that the right move is Abreu, he will just elevate everybody one spot. Montero will get a chance to earn his money and become the short-term closer. And like you said, you hope Presley's back sooner rather than later, and it's not anything serious.
Herman on Herman gives us his analysis of Breggy Bomb Salsa. He says that salsa is, bleep, garbage super trash.
Ouch.
So Herman might have been a little bit more of a scorching take than
How was
than
Herman's grammar and spelling today? Was it good? He gets a little, when he gets fired up and emotional, sometimes
you know the words he never misspells, though?
The cuss words.
The ones we cannot say.
Yeah.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 in Edo. All right. Cody Castuccio had an idea for a trade at number 12 to acquire a very good football player in the NFL. Would you be open to that idea, trading 12 for a young player that's already established in the league? And who was that one name that Castuccio mentioned? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.